We're going to see a man about a dog and a car and Alfie Allen? We're watching John Wick. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, as we kick off a new month and a new theme. It's June, June Wick, where we are going to cover the four main John Wick movies. My name is Drew, and I need the guy that sometimes speaks fluent Russian, but most of the time just sounds like a regular American dude. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm fantastic. I have been wanting to do June Wick for, I think, 2 years now.
Yeah, we had something pop up last year where we couldn't do it.
Yeah, because I wanted to do it as soon as part four came out. And like that had always been kind of my ambition. But I think chapter four came out like, I think March of that year and of 2023. And yeah, I think we already have plans. I think that's when we did the Furious Summer.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
And so I think that's true. I think 24 was,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Either anyway, way.
I this is something I've been wanting to do for quite some time. And the first time I brought it up, I think you had told me you hadn't seen it. And then when I made that my birthday challenge, you're like, no, I've seen this movie. So on the fly, I had to pick something else. I'm so mad at you for that.
I think I'd already seen, because I bought these movies it was when there were just three of them out.
You buying like movies means nothing to me.
True, but I bought them in like a trio for $10 on iTunes or something.
So that would be probably around like 2020 or something, 2021. But I know for a little bit you had said you hadn't seen it. I remember like being on the ground floor. I'm a big Keanu Reeves fan. I'm a big action movie person. And until this movie came out, the American action scene was largely dead. I mean, of course you had your direct to streaming, direct to video stuff, and you had a couple of franchises that were still chugging along. But for the most part, I mean, the action scene had languished for quite some time. And then this movie starts generating a little bit of buzz, especially once Keanu Reeves is attached and it gets a couple of good festival showings. And there is just this kind of rumbling that this movie could be something. I remember seeing this because initially there wasn't a lot of massive hype. Like people were kind of getting excited as soon as the trailer started really coming out in full force. But like when I saw this movie opening day, now given it was in the afternoon, but I saw this by myself. Like I was in a theater by myself. So I did not know how well this was going to do. And it was a modest hit. Like this movie cost 20 to 30 and made 86, which for an action movie like this was pretty big.
It's pretty wild to see some of the people behind this movie too. Like one, the cast in this movie is
amazing.
Huge. It's really, really good. But it's also sort of like, you know, it's directed by Chad Stileski, who co-directed by David Leitch, though he is not credited as a director. Chad Stileski is mostly known as being a stunts guy. And you can
specifically,
which you can totally see in this, but specifically, he was the stunts guy on the Matrix movies,
he was specifically Keanu Reeves' stunt double. And if you know anything about the culture on the Matrix, it was that Keanu Reeves got really close with the stunt coordinators, the action, the martial arts folks, and his stunt doubles. And apparently that's what he does anyway. But on that particular movie, like he has made plenty of things with various folks because of their connection to him on The Matrix. And weirdly enough, Stats Leski was also Brandon Lee's stunt double in The Crow.
Yeah. So he's, I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. God. And he's going to be directing the Henry Cavill Highlander film.
Which big yeah. up. Hilariously, yeah. One of my favorite bits about him is he was also in The Matrix 4, which is not a great movie. I did not really like it much
Hard
at all.
Hard disagree.
There is a the character Trinity has a fake husband that she in that movie.
Named Chad,
who is played by Chad Stahelski. So, Stahelski, excuse me. I think I'm mispronouncing his name. Which is just, it's pretty funny that you have fake yeah. Neo being there as a, and just again, I love that, you know, Keanu Reeves just makes these connections with people. And it turns out that, like, you know, remember when Keanu Reeves was sort of picked on for being kind of a one-note actor? And he still kind of is, but you know what?
He's got a very specific tool set. He knows how to use it.
And he's a genuine guy, and he treats people well. And it turns out in Hollywood, if you show up on time, you do the work, and you treat people well, people will continue to invite you back into their lives and their productions.
Olivia Spencer tells a story about her, like, one of her first times in LA, and her car broke down. Octavia Spencer, sorry. I'm all out of sorts today. We're recording at a different time than we usually do. Someone had stopped to help her, and she didn't see it first, and she was all out of sorts. It turned out it was Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and this is before
she said, I will support that man for as long as I live, because at my lowest moment, he was there, did not know me, did not know I was wanting to be an actor, just helped a stranger on the side of a road.
Yeah, wanting to be. She was not famous. She was not. Does Octavia Spencer have an Oscar?
I don't know if she has an Oscar or not. Yeah, she should, but I don't think she does.
We'll look it up real fast.
But it's one of those things, like several folks. Yeah,
she has one for both The Help and Hidden Figures.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize she won for Hidden Figures. Awesome. She's great in that. I've always been a Keanu guy. And I've always been a Keanu defender because, yes, like you pointed out, at one point, you know, a lot of people dogged on him. And the thing is like, it doesn't matter because, like, at various points, almost like once a decade, in the 90s, a few times, he makes an iconic movie. And
he's made a couple of them now.
Speed, The Matrix. Like, you know, he always pops up in these things. But it always kind of like came in bursts. And then it finally seemed like people have been behind him, and I think we're waiting for a movie for them to really support him. And then along comes John Wick, which generates some solid buzz because of its good action chops. And yeah, this movie was a success and then went on to become a massive franchise of four movies, one current spinoff movie, another one in production, and a prequel miniseries on Peacock.
Yeah, which is just, it's absolutely wild. And you know what? This is also around the same time. Because, I mean, Keanu Reeves has always been a good guy, but I feel like I never really heard, you heard a little bit of stuff about it, but like in the world of the internet, post-John Wick is when everybody talked about how good of a dude Keanu is.
Well, the internet's always been kind of like, hey, Keanu Reeves is a good dude. That's kind of always been a meme. That and sad Keanu.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, honestly, if you know some of Keanu's life story, there's a reason for him to be sad Keanu.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He's very, very zen person. I've always loved Keanu. And I've always loved good action films. And so along comes this movie that, not to spoil nothing, but for my money, I think is the best American action film of the 21st century. And like, yes, the Southeast Asian film industry, yeah, you get stuff like The Raid and The Night Comes for Us, and you know, obviously the, you know, stuff like Ong Bak, and you know, all these great action movies and these visceral violent movies. But in terms of the States, I don't think we've made a good proper like old school action film. And this is a movie that's made by people who love those movies, that worship at the altar of John Woo, that love the obviously his partnership with Chow Yun-fat, you know, and the movies that those inspired in the 80s and 90s. And
including the fact that, you know, Chad Stahelski, being a martial arts guy, was an actor in Bloodsport 3. He was in a movie called Fight Zone. He was in a movie called Nemesis 2. Like, he's been involved in these movies. He did stunt work in we talked about The Crow, in Escape from LA, in a bunch of, in of course The Matrix, in a bunch of these action movies of back in the day.
Even as recent as doing a bunch of the Marvel stuff. He was in Winter Soldier, Deadpool 2, Deadpool Wolverine. Like, he continues to do his stunt stuff. The guy clearly loves like just action stuff. And apparently not only was he stunt double for Brandon Lee, but apparently they were good friends and trained together at the same academy.
Yeah. That's like,
this movie, before we kind of get into it, is kind of a perfect storm, and it's the right place and right time. And I remember when this movie came out, I legit left the theater thinking, I think I just saw something that might be a shift in things.
Yeah. And it's really, really excellent. I mean, it is.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever actually talked about this movie, which is so funny because I know that you've seen it, but I don't even know how you feel about this movie. I just made you watch it.
No. So here's the deal. I think John Wick 1 is, because so far, yes, though I own the first three John Wick movies, and I will probably have to pick up the fourth one because I'm not sure if any of them are actually streaming right now.
All of them are HBO Max right now.
Well, great to know. But regardless, I think John Wick is a fantastic movie that toes the line between realism and fantasy so closely. Because they make the stuff that needs to work, work, and they leave a lot just left unsaid. And we're going to talk a bit about that as we get into the movie itself, because I want to go over the plot. Because the plot, let's face it, It's an action movie plot. It's not really why
plot doesn't have to, in an action movie, the plot doesn't have to be complex. What you have to have are meaty characters that you can really get behind and an interesting world for them to be set loose in. And this movie has a very basic old school revenge plot that has really fascinating characters and an insanely engrossing world to get into.
Yes. And the character work has to be said over and over and over again. And a lot of that is on Keanu, but a lot of that is on all of the sort of murderer's row, pun intended, of other characters that happen in this movie. So let's lay out the plot, and then we're gonna and then I'm sure we'll get off on a tangent again, because that's just what we happen to do. So John Wick is grieving. We see him waking up. We see him. Well, I guess what this opens at the end of the movie, and then we sort of flash back to the very beginning.
Common action movie thing to do.
Always a thing to do, where it looks like he's dying on the side of the road, and then we flash back, and it's him watching a video on his phone of a woman that seems to be someone he cares about. And then we go through just sort of these little montages of his life and how he had a wife and she got sick and she died. And then Willem Dafoe came to the funeral and said hello.
You know what's so funny is I always forget that Willem Dafoe is in this movie. Every single time. And then when he pops up, it's like, oh yeah, Willem Dafoe is here.
I did the same thing. It's like, oh yeah. Again,
I've seen this movie several times, and every time he's like, you know, well, I'm something of a solid killer myself.
Yeah. Again, Willem Dafoe was in this movie. Like, this movie has such a freaking incredible cast. But we don't know anything about John at this point. We don't know anything about John Wick, except that he is very sad for a very understandable reasons. And he is a person shows up at his door with a dog crate and a puppy and a note.
Very cute puppy.
A very cute puppy. A little, what is it? A beagle, little beagle puppy.
Little beagle.
And a note from John's deceased wife saying, I know I'm gone now, but this is for you because this will help you not grieve alone.
Yeah, this will give you you need something to love other than your car. Because he has this really awesome 1970 Mustang.
69, baby. It's a 69.
I thought he asked if it was 69 and he corrects him and says 70.
It's listed as a 69 online, so I don't know.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Maybe
he says 70 is like 69.
I think that might be it.
And
when he and Theon Greyjoy have a little chit chat.
So he's like, okay, well, this is a thing. And the dog is immediately endearing because it's a very cute puppy.
It's a very cute beagle.
And they get up the next morning. The dog eats some cereal and milk. They go for a drive where John's clearly working through some stuff as he is whipping this car around. It's incredibly dangerous. I don't think he's wearing a seatbelt. I don't know what the dog is doing at this point.
The dog's just chilling. The dog's just happy to be there. The dog immediately like imprints on John. Yes, and the scene you're talking about is like he pulls up this what looks like to be like a private airfield, and the guy just lets him in. So you're like, all right, this guy's got connections.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just kind of like just shifting around, and then there's this one great thing where he's charging towards a parked like dump truck or something.
I think it's like a refueling truck or something. It's this big truck.
Something like that. And you know, does the whole and then brakes beforehand. You know, we're clearly seeing this as a guy who is like Drew said, going through some stuff.
Yeah.
Stops to get gas where a bunch of Russian ne'er-do-wells are also refueling.
So this is where we need to have a conversation about one of the actors that makes this movie work. And that is your boy, Alfie Allen.
I love Alfie. He's so good at being just a little...
Yeah. Yeah. So Alfie Allen is probably best known for playing Theon Greyjoy in Game of Thrones, who's also just a huge, we are being very kind by calling him that.
Well, Drew likes to keep the show PG-13. And I'm trying to acquiesce.
Thank you very much. He's very good at playing just an awful, gross dude.
Mm-hmm.
Hilariously, before this movie, the only two things I knew about Alfie Allen were Game of Thrones and the song Alfie by Alfie's sister, Lily Allen.
Lily Allen.
Who was a singer in the UK, which I always found it very funny that she has been a recording artist for years and years, but suddenly Alfie's on Game of Thrones and he's more famous than she is, which just doesn't seem very fair.
Not anymore.
Fair.
I mean, Lily Allen's always been pretty famous, dude.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things where outside, like, she's very famous in the UK. It's outside of the UK that it's like, it's...
Not with that last album where the entire album is about blasting David Harbour.
Which, deserved. Anyway.
Oh, absolutely. But like that album and that tour were massive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is funny that she had a song called Alfie because, I mean, at the time, I knew she had a brother named Alfie, but like I hadn't seen him in anything yet. So like I just knew that it was like, oh, she's singing about her brother.
Yeah, and that song is about how he doesn't have a job and he sits around smoking weed all day playing PlayStation. And
which is largely what... what's his name? Yosef.
But
largely what he does.
Yeah. So Alfie Allen's character Yosef gets in John's face, like, "Oh, it's a nice car, man. Let me buy it." Everything has a price, that he says in Russian.
Yeah.
He's
like, every little bitch has their price or something. And John says in Russian, "Not this bitch," and drives off.
Which is just, wow. This is when you know, if you hadn't seen the trailers for this movie or know what this kind of movie is, what John Wick is ultimately a power fantasy. And it's based around this one scene and the next scene that follows, that you have a twerpy little D-bag get in your face, and then that D-bag follows you home, kills your dog, and steals your car, and you spend the next several days killing his whole friends and family.
I mean, it's not just that. There's a lot of allegory in this film. There's a lot of really cool readings of John Wick as the epic hero.
Yeah.
John Wick in purgatory, the moral ambiguity of the action hero. All of that's at play here. Because I know it sounds like we're just, like, talking about the cool bits. What is so
you immediately cut out. Oh, you're still gone. There we go.
No, I'm good. What is so insanely awesome about this film is its writing. Like, one of the strongest bits is a lot of the character work and the dialogue, because that is what really makes this movie shine. Outside of the action sequences, because this has some of the best action sequences ever put to film in American cinema. I mean, I will say that to me.
Yeah, and it's so calculated and professional in a lot of ways, and then it gets so raw and dogged. Good.
What I love, before we get back into the plot, one of the things that, because you talked about the power of fantasy, but in most movies, like in the 80s, like Stallone, Schwarzenegger movies, these guys are just running through people. And John Wick does do that. But John Wick, and again, these guys studied at the feet of John Woo, Chow Yun-Fat, and specifically Jackie Chan. And the reason I bring up Jackie Chan is because what separates him from a lot of martial art heroes in film is Jackie gets hurt in the movies. He gets punched, he gets hit, he gets attacked. And a lot of guys try to keep that invincible persona up. And one of the awesome things about John Wick is that John and Keanu don't do that. They get hurt and hit a lot. He is not invincible. He is excellent at what he does, but the movie does understand, unlike Batman comics, like in reality, even if you have all of those skill sets, you're still going to take some licks.
Yeah.
And this movie does that so well.
And they balance it by, you know, the guys that he takes out very easily are the guys that he was going to take out very easily. But there are different levels of bad guy in this movie, and he has different levels of efficacy taking those guys down.
Yeah, and I love how the movie deals with that. And I wanted to point that out before we moved on, because I wanted to like kind of tip my hat. I was like, yes, I love this kind of history of action film. Like, watching this, I see people who understand the genre and have studied it. And I think that's what makes it so, like, it's such a love letter as well as a new step forward that I wanted to start right there. But yeah, this script has so many needle drop lines that are like, and if you read them on the page, you're like, oh, okay, that's not a really big deal of a line. You see it on screen, delivered by the actor, directed and blocked by the director. And you're like, okay, like you have some really badass lines like John Wick's, like, you act like he's the boogeyman. John Wick's the guy you call to kill the boogeyman. One of the best lines.
It's a great line. It's a great line.
It's a great line. But also, and we'll get back to the plot, I promise. When John Leguizamo, who I love, is in this movie, basically, when some stuff happens and John Wick, or actually before that, Theon Greyjoy, or Alfie, brings the...
Yosef.
The stolen car to John Leguizamo's garage. John Leguizamo instantly recognizes whose car that is. Yeah,
John Leguizamo also plays a character, but I also love the idea that it's just actor John Leguizamo running this shop.
I do too. but he's like, "Who? Where'd you get the car?"
Aurelio is his character's name. Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
He knew exactly who that was, and like punches Yosef, and you know, obviously my father's gonna hear about them, and he's like, "I'm gonna call him."
And yeah, if you take me, and his buddy pulls a gun on him, and he grabs the gun and holds it to his forehead and is like, effectively like, if you do this right now, you're doing me a favor because you don't know who you're messing with.
Exactly. And when the father calls them, the father who is the elite Russian mob boss, says, "I heard you struck my son." "Yes, sir." "Why?" And he tells him, and he goes, "Well, who did the car belong to?" And he goes, "John Wick, sir." And all you, it cuts to him, who is looking out over the city, and he goes, "Oh," and then hangs up. And you're like, "Oh," like the stuff they do to build up John Wick is these little moments, and it's such a good, effective use of very simple imagery and dialogue.
and the imagery. Let's talk about imagery, because again, we're skipping around in some of the plot. I mean, let's face it, John Wick is one of the most popular movies of the last 10 years.
These guys break into his house, they get the jump on him because he's asleep, they beat him up, they kill his dog, his newborn puppy, and take his car.
Yeah. As Viggo, the Russian crime boss, big bad, played by the late Michael Nyquist, which I forgot know. He passed away
in 2017, I think.
Yeah, what a performance out of this guy! Oh, golly,
so good,
but
so good.
But the idea that because we get a lot of backstory about John from Viggo telling it to his son, Alfie Allen, and after he also punches Alfie Allen in the stomach enough to make him throw up twice, which is just fantastic. He's telling this whole story about what's going on, and it cuts back and forth with John Wick in his basement with this sledgehammer breaking this, like he had sealed this part of his life away, but he never let it go.
Yeah. I love it so much because, again, so many like lesser writers and directors would try to explain what he's doing, and that is what's so brilliant about this movie. Drew and I were having a conversation earlier this morning about the burning need in franchises to explain the dumbest things or the things that don't need explaining, like, you know, how Han got the Millennium Falcon and things like that. And I know that's
how Han Solo got the last name Solo.
Yeah.
I like the movie Solo a lot. But
I'm very much a fan of Solo. It's a movie I do like a lot.
But that scene sucks.
Actually, that one doesn't bother me.
It bothers me greatly.
I always hate these things of like, oh, let's explain things that don't need anything. We don't need, you know, Pennyworth, the origin of Batman's butler. We don't need to find out, like, I don't need a 10-episode series on, you know, some random detail prequel. And by and large, this franchise understands that. Like, even those four movies, a prequel and two...
Well, let me tell you from my perspective, having only seen the first one.
Okay.
So John Wick uses a sledgehammer to break open his basement floor, mm-hmm. where there is a suitcase with a bunch of seemingly very specialized guns and a bunch of rows of stacked coins that just look, they look gold. They're very gold, and they never explain what those are. And we don't know what they are then. The only other thing we know about that is that there is apparently a very special phone in John Wick's basement that only some people have the number to, that is not tied to anything else, that is used for one thing. And that is so cool. And as we go through the movie, those coins play a little bit of a role in that they're used to get access to certain secret places and secret things. And I am terrified, terrified that as we go through these other three movies, they're going to explain too much about this world. Because right now, the world is so cool in that there is a whole underground world of assassins. There is a hotel called the Continental that everything everything runs through. It's a safe space, and they use these coins as some sort of internal currency that means something only within this organization. And I only know this from the context clues of the movie, and I personally need no further information.
As far as I remember, in terms of the coins, I don't think they ever, like, outright fully explain it. Maybe there's a throwaway line in the Continental prequel series, but even that series is, like, completely different because it's, well, I'm not going to get too much into it, but most of the movies kind of just play and expand this world. And that's what I like, because it kind of never forgets, hey, these movies are about John.
Yeah.
But we are going to show you this really cool world, and it gives us so much context because there are several times where he talks about, hey, I'll give you a coin. So these things are very valuable, even within the community. And they're probably hard to come by because people do things for these coins.
They're probably hard to come by. And John Wick has a lot of them.
Like, he does have a lot of them.
A coin seems to mean a lot when things happen.
Which is something I love about this movie, because it does come from that cut of, you know, your John McClane's and your kind of like morally ambiguous action heroes, because you think about them, right? And you think about like how someone like that becomes who they are. Like, think about Rambo. You know, these guys are broken people to begin with. And we support them because they're the protagonists of the story. And we also come from the idea of like, oh, well, this guy's wife just died of cancer. She gave him this puppy so that he could kind of help move on. And this D-bag steals his car and kills his puppy. That's enough. I mean, look, you're gonna kill the puppy alone. I'm down. Kill everyone.
So this is where I want to talk about the first big fight scene. Well, the first real fight scene. Okay, go ahead.
One second, real quick. But everything that we watch from that point on, you're like, oh. So from the prior life John had, John was not a good guy. First of all, think of who he worked for and what he did. I once saw John Wick kill three men in a bar with a pencil.
That comes up
because people keep asking him, like, I heard about the pencil thing, you know? And this man is very adept at killing people. And again, if the Russian mob boss is saying John Wick's the guy you call to kill the boogeyman, okay, well, yeah, he might have been killing bad people, but you don't get into the hitman game unless you've done some bad stuff.
Now, I'm not saying John Wick is a good guy.
I'm saying he's morally ambiguous, and that's interesting.
Because here's the most interesting thing about me. To John Wick, about John Wick, a guy that we see angry. We see when Viggo sends a bunch of goons after him, knowing full well that all of those guys are going to die, effectively trying to teach a lesson to his son that John Wick is not someone you mess with. You're going to send a whole team in here and they're all going to die. All, I think, party of 12 is the reservation that is made. Which
I also love the code.
Love the code.
You need a dinner reservation? So good. Also, and he has like, I mean, slightly bigger roles in each one, but shout out to the late, great Lance Reddick, who like, even in this movie, is just iconic.
Lance, I want to talk about Lance Reddick once we actually get to the Continental. I know we're getting pretty late in this episode already, so we're gonna kind
of. Okay, I'm good.
We gotta push things along here. But here's the thing about this first fight scene: one is so good. It is it's in the dark, but it's well lit enough that you can see everything. You have John going through. He is headshotting dudes left and right. But it's also he takes shots that seem like they're off, but it's to make it, he's using Resident Evil rules where he's making he hits him in the leg to make him drop, and then he hits him in the head, which is what
when I walked to the theater, someone asked what I thought. I was like, I can't remember the last time I saw that many people shot in the face.
It's a lot. And later on in that movie, the effects work is like, they don't pull punches in this.
Mm-mm.
Like, all these guys were in masks, so it's kind of meh, but there are dudes that just get popped through the head on screen. And what I love about it is it all happens so fast. It's not like they're not slow-mo down to do anything. It's all
1,000%. Now that'll probably I think that happens later, but like when important moments happen, they don't do a slow down. It's like, nah, bop. And I love that. Like, because you think, oh, this movie ends when he catches up to Yosef. Nope. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
And like, that's maybe like 3/4 of the way through.
Yeah.
And that is like, you know, he's in the middle of a speech. Like, it was just a, and he's nope, pop, pop.
Well, that's another thing about Yosef that I like a lot. I want to talk about it in more detail when we get to that point in the movie. But what I want to talk about now is after John Wick kills all these dudes, you see police.
The red circle?
No.
Oh, at his house.
You see police, police lights out front of his house, and John opens the door with his gun behind his back. And it's like, oh, hey, Jimmy, because John Wick knows who this cop is. And this cop says, oh, hey, John. You working tonight?
Sorry, Jimmy, a noise complaint. Yeah. And you see him look behind John. He sees all his bodies. And it's like, John Sheepers is like, I'll try to keep it down. Have a good night, John.
So this is the thing about John Wick that is so interesting to me. He's literally just killed a bunch of dudes brutally and violently in his own home. But everyone who was ever kind or polite to him, he is just as kind and polite back. Jimmy, the police officer.
Marcus.
Lance Reddick's character, the hotel manager.
Charon, I think.
Charon, which is, you know, yes. It's a reference to the boatman who ferries people across the river Styx.
The underworld, yeah.
Thank you, Video Game Hades, for keeping that in my head. the bartender at the Continental that he seems to
just love him.
the doctor that stitches him up after a fight, like, it's effectively one of those situations where Baba Yaga is very kind if you are kind to him, but if you cross him at all, you're done.
It honestly, you know who else functions that way? And after you watch all of those movies, you kind of realize Hannibal Lecter.
You know?
Like, when he kills that one, I think it's in Red Dragon, when he kills that one orchestra person, it's because they were ruining the orchestra. They were playing off key. Like, he always has a reason, you know?
Well, I don't think John Wick's killing somebody for playing off key.
Well, probably not. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
We don't see that in this movie, at least. So I
love that about him, though, is like the kindness is there. And even when he meets someone who is going to basically be kind of a antagonist, when he meets him, he's like, Perkins. Like, he doesn't seem to have a whole lot of love for her, but at the same time, it's like, you know, there's at least an acknowledgement there.
And that's the thing about the Continental, is that it's supposed to be neutral ground. It's like Highlander. It's like religious ground where they're not allowed to fight.
Yeah.
Although Perkins does something else in that.
I've also been going through Parks and Rec again, so that every single time someone said Perkins, I was thinking of Aziz Ansari, Chris Traeger going, and Perkins!
Perkins, played by Adrian Palicki, who I also forget is in this movie.
Yeah, she's pretty good in this. She's pretty good in it. Probably one of her better roles, yeah. Honestly.
But yeah, I kind of want to burn through some of the big fights here, because
yeah, of course.
So yeah, John goes to the Continental, the mysterious hotel. We encounter Lance Reddick's character, Karen. We encounter Ian McShane's character, Winston, and Ian McShane, just what a magnetic performance this guy gives in this.
I love Ian McShane, but Winston is one of his great roles.
Yeah. He's the owner of the Continental. He's the guy that runs the place. He seems to always have information, but he knows how to play the game. He could tell John everything that John wants to know, but he won't do it because it violates the code of the Continental. Because
he clearly loves John, and that is something that pops up throughout this series.
No spoilers. Let me encounter that.
I'm just saying he's in the movies. I'm not saying what happens. I'm just saying he's in them. Again, there's an entire prequel show about him specifically.
Fair.
So I do want to mention that on top of the killer action sequences, again, there are moments of dialogue that are just tremendous. And they're almost always like small moments. But I guess I'm going to save one to talk about when we get further in the movie, because there's one moment that the first time I saw it, I wasn't sure how to take it. And every single time I've watched it since, I was like, this might be one of my favorite scenes in the movie in terms of Keanu's performance. And I love it so much. But yeah, let's burn through some of these action sequences.
So we got to go through the Red Circle. So the Red Circle is this combination.
Also love that Kevin Nash is the bouncer.
Yeah. Pro wrestler Kevin Nash. I didn't know who he was.
Take the night off. Thank you, sir.
And he does it. Like, that's the thing. There is only one person that takes the night off when John Wick is around that ends up getting popped as a result of it. But Kevin Nash is not one of them. Yeah. Wick gets the tip that Yosef is at the Red Circle, which is a combination dance club bathhouse. I don't really know how that works.
Yeah, I was like the what this club is. I mean, I don't doubt that a place like this exists for the type of people that would be there.
For sure.
Like, this is a weird spot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So and this is where we get a little Wick Batman going in. He's sneaking in through places. The intimidation factor on Francis out front is just very good. And he's just killing people. And he's killing people and killing people and killing people and trying to find out where Yosef is and all of this stuff. And hey, if you tell him what he wants to know, he'll let you go. But if you don't tell him what he wants to know, he's going to end your life, which happens a lot. And he's stealthing all through with a knife. Like, he's used a gun very effectively so far. Turns out, also very good with a knife. Notably, and this isn't actually in the fight in his house earlier on, when he's trying to stab the guy and the guy's trying to stab him. And he's got the knife, and he realizes he doesn't have the force to just push the knife all the way through. So he takes his other hand and just hits his hand. And all it does is it makes the blade bounce and hits the guy a little. And that just over and over again, hit. And all of a sudden he's getting weaker and weaker because he's getting little tiny cuts before he can just stab him. And it's like, wow, that's extremely effective, I bet. Don't know if it's at all real for the real world, but it seems real enough.
Yeah, I mean, despite the, I don't want to say, it's cartoonish sounds derogatory, but despite the elaborate choreography of the action sequences, because they just look cool, and it's okay for a movie to look cool, I do like they treat the violence very seriously. Like, a lot of people love to, like, kind of scoff at this particular movie and movies like it because, oh, well, it just desensitizes you. This movie's not desensitized. This movie just shows this is what it would be like. It's very visceral. It's very violent. And these people are not dying in glorious ways. Yes, it looks cool on screen because it's being shot stylistically. But this movie is very upfront and grounded in terms of its actual violence.
Yeah.
But obviously, it's ramping everything up to 11 because, okay, we're gonna give us a little bit of a superhero here. Well,
and when it comes to this scene, as John goes through stabbing dudes to take him out quietly and then getting caught and the firefight happening, and this has already happened in the movie so far, part of what makes this feel more real is the little bits that they do. John Wick has to reload his gun multiple times. He does it. I don't know. I was not bullet counting, but I bet they did a close enough job to make it at least seem realistic that he would be swapping clips and reloading his gun as this stuff is going on. Yes, he is getting hit constantly and he is hitting people constantly and he gets thrown off a two-story balcony and lands and then, and then gets up and kills more dudes. And that's pretty unrealistic, especially because at this point, does he already have the stab wound in his gut, or does that happen here? I can't remember.
I think it happens there.
It does happen there, and it's at the next.
Yeah, because he goes back after he's gone through everything and is sleeping in his hotel room.
Yeah,
and then Willem Dafoe gives him the warning shot because Perkins is breaking in and trying to kill him, and. But yes, to answer your question, I do love that, like, yeah, he's constantly running out of bullets. And I don't know if you've watched, I know there's a documentary, which I have, but I haven't watched, called Wick is Pain.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of footage that made the rounds online of the actual weapons train that Keanu Reeves went through. And seeing him actually handle the weapons as he's supposed to and dropping clips and reloading stuff. And like, he knows how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
He may not be John Wick, but he can at least load a gun and do what he's supposed to do.
Like, he got pretty into this stuff, which is wild for a dude who seems to try to live so peacefully in his regular life.
But he does, but he's also super into motorcycles. Yeah, and that's like, fair. I think he likes general thrills. I don't like, he's Tom Cruise in that he did real training. He's not Tom Cruise in that he's going to hang outside of a plane.
Fair.
You know? Fair. But I love that bit, but one of my favorite bits, I don't know. I mean, are we married to just going through the plot, or can we just kind of.
No, let's. At this point, I want to get to the point where because we talked about Alfie Allen.
Yeah.
And I let me get through this part of the plot and then we can kind of talk about whatever we want. So we go through this whole thing. He's got the whole thing with Perkins that's trying to kill him because she's breaking the rules, which has a great payoff that I'm sure we'll talk about as well. But we finally get to the point where John Wick has tracked down Alfie Allen's character.
Mm-hmm.
And he is going after this dude by effectively sniping all of his dudes all around. And the thing about John so far is that it's clear that he doesn't want to just kill Yosef. He doesn't want to just kill Alfie Allen's character. He wants to get close to him. He wants to make him fear. He wants to make him afraid. And he gets kind of close to him at the red circle, but he gets away. But in this case, he doesn't. And after killing all of these dudes and all of Yosef's best friends and confidants and shooting them in the head through their Xbox headset, which was just crazy to see, just fantastic. He finally gets to Yosef, and Yosef is begging and pleading, and he doesn't even get into the middle of his first plea before John just shoots him in the face.
And then in Russian says, everything's got a price.
Because at this point, and you can tell on his face, if this had been 2 days ago, there would have been more of a scene here. But at this point, John Wick is just tired and is ready mm-hmm. for this to be over.
Yeah, and it's also a callback to Yosef saying everything's got a price.
Sure, sure, sure.
But one of my favorite scenes, to backtrack a little bit, is there's a bit where John Wick gets overtaken and captured and is tied into a chair in this elaborate church. And Vigo, the mob boss, he and him are having a back and forth. And Vigo obviously thinks he has the up, and is acting like he has the upper hand. He's one of the most feared men in the city. And even he still is kind of handling John with a little bit of kid gloves because he knows what can happen. And this is my favorite scene because John Wick is beaten, bloodied, and handcuffed to a chair. And people are still scared of him. And then he delivers this bit of dialogue. And he just says, Vigo. He goes, yeah. When Helen died, I lost everything. Until that dog arrived on my doorstep. A final gift from my wife. In that moment, I received some semblance of hope. An opportunity to grieve unalone. And your son took that from me. And Vigo tries to interrupt, and John just keeps talking over him. Stole that from me. Killed that from me. People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. So you can either hand over your son, or you can die screaming alongside him. It's one of the best bits in the entire movie.
It's fantastic.
Because again, this man is beaten, bloodied, and tied to a chair, and still is commanding everything.
and
but also the way he delivers, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
I'm thinking I'm back. I tried to pull that off last week in the lead into this. Didn't quite have the same effect. But
think I ruined that for you last week.
You did. It's okay though. I forgive you. Unlike John Wick. but the fact that Vigo gives up his son is such a moment in that. That after all of that, and yes, we have a little bit of help from Willem Dafoe's character, because if Willem Dafoe's character wasn't there, John Wick would be dead. But John gets free while still in handcuffs, takes out a couple of guys, and then lets Vigo give up his son in order to save his own life, because John has some sort of code.
He does. But Vigo, and you kind of know this, is not going to just go away.
Yeah. And he doesn't go away. It ends up being the final moment, which, you know, the only reason John is having trouble is because at this point he's bleeding from his gut and he's been hit by a car.
Yeah. The only thing that bummed me out was like, so there is a character. So when Perkins attacks John in his hotel room, John eventually takes her out, doesn't kill her, but he's out that's in a the
violation,
hallway.
Cause that's a violation of the code.
Right. And you hear some behind us like, everything good? Hi, Harry.
Oh, John, you're back?
Yeah. And I love, like, Harry only has like 5 minutes of screen time tops. And so endearing. Big Carl Weathers energy to him. This is, of course, I just lost. He was
Clark Peters is who plays.
Yeah, Clark Peters, who was on Detective Freeman in The Wire.
Yeah, he's in The Wire. Like, he was in. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
He's been in a bunch of stuff, but I think he's in all of The Wire. So like that was like his big thing. But I loved him. I hate that he dies almost immediately, but. I there's so many small things, and I remember, and I was kind of looking at some of the like Letterboxd reviews of Friends from around the time this movie came out. And so many people were like, man, I wish this was a cinematic universe. Why can't a movie like this have a cinematic universe? You know, because no one thought this movie was going to get a sequel. You know?
Well, now it is a cinematic
universe. And now it's a cinematic universe that spreads far and wide. And, you know, I'm so excited because I have not rewatched the entire series like in a go, which is why I've been waiting to do that with this, because I told myself, well, if not this year, then I'm going to do it myself. But I was kind of hoping that we would get to this year, and we did, because this is one of my favorite action franchises. I think the first film is one of the best American action movies of all time. It's certainly the best American action movie of the 21st century to me. I'm really curious if my current John Wick ranking holds up, which is currently 1-4-3-2. And I deeply enjoy all four movies. I just think some are stronger than others.
Well, so I want to say before we wrap up this episode, because I think we got a lot more to talk about.
We both love this movie.
Yeah, for sure. Again, we go back to wishing it was a cinematic universe, and we have to talk about Perkins and the end of Perkins.
Oh, so
because,
good.
You know, Perkins and Viggo and a bunch of their goons go and kill Marcus, and that's a whole other thing. Willem Dafoe's character, but Perkins broke the code of the Continental, and John Wick doesn't get revenge on Perkins for what she did. Perkins is taken out by a bunch of Ian McShane's dudes just in somewhere. I don't even know where she is. It looks like,
yeah.
And I'm not even sure if it's in New York anymore. It's just, and the blood splatter you see as a bunch of dudes shoot her in the head at the same time, and it's blood splattering out every different direction. Like, it was a wild way to go out. But it also, like, as she has been so powerful in this movie, to see that happen and realize how powerless she was the entire time is very, very interesting, as a world building thing.
Yeah, I fully agree. Like, all the things they do to enrich the world. And again, this is how strong the script is. There are so many details we haven't talked about that have to do with the world of the assassins and the Continental and how serious all of that is. This is the most grounded this franchise gets, obviously. It gets super fun, but very wild.
Yeah.
There is literally a sequence that is Hotline Miami.
Well, Miles, you want to know some stats?
Yep.
John Wick has so far, at the end of movie one, been hit by one car.
Okay.
John Wick has killed, by the end of movie one, how many people? You want to guess? You want to guess? You want to guess?
85?
You're close. You're a little high. 77. Okay. John Wick kills 77 people in the first movie.
Okay.
So we've been hit by one car, killed 77 people. That is the stats for the end of movie one.
Stabbed at least once. and punched a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because I love it. We know where he's hurt. So, like, it's interesting when, like, everyone seems to know that once he was stabbed, because everyone keeps going for those ribs. But it's also a very common point to go for. So there is that too. But
for sure. For sure.
Yeah. I absolutely adore this movie. I'm so glad that we're going through this franchise, and I'm very, very curious to see how you feel going forward.
Yeah, so this was, of course, 2014's John Wick. Next week, we're going to 2017's John Wick Chapter 2. Not John Wick 2, John Wick Chapter 2, which is just a cool way of doing that.
It is, until they ruin it with Chapter 3 Parabellum and then go back to Chapter 4. It's such a weird thing.
You know, we'll get there. We'll talk about it. as we as we are almost at the we're just past the 10th anniversary of John Wick Chapter 2, which is absolutely wild to think about. But with that said, gang, that is where we're going to end the episode tonight. If you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode we have ever done. You can find us on social media, either at or slash themoreyounerd, just about everywhere. And you can email us, themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. You can also go to cosmiccrit.com. That's our sister show where Miles and I and all of our friends play tabletop role-playing games, specifically the role-playing game Starfinder by Paizo. That's cosmiccrit.com. And if you go to cosmiccrit.com and look in the upper right-hand corner for the Cosmic Crit Discord link, you can find that and talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we're going to end the show as we always do with a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.